I'm Martin Polyakov. I'm a research professor in chemistry at the University of Nottingham, and I'm also Foreign Secretary and one of the Vice Presidents of the Royal Society of London. I was born in London. My father was Russian, born in Moscow. My mother was in English, born in London, and didn't speak a word of Russian. And I was brought up in a household where my Russian grandparents were living in a flat on the top floor of our house.
Did you learn Russian?
I learned Russian when I started learning Russian when I was 14 at school. And as soon as I started, I then went every night to see my grandmother and talk to her or try to talk to her in Russian for about an hour every night. So I speak, even now, rather old-fashioned Russian.
Has Russian changed that much then?
It has become much less formal, and since 1991 the language has filled up with English words. I learned a nice word recently, tweetnut, which means to tweet on Twitter. So there are more and more foreign words going into Russian.
Now, as I understand it, I mean, you're obviously a chemist, but looking at your family history, you seem to have bucked the trend quite a bit by being a chemist, and some people would say let the side down, because there's a lot of physicists in your clan, aren't there?
Yes, my father, grandfather and son are physicists, and both my parents-in-law and one of my wife's grandfathers were also physicists, but I wasn't good enough at maths, but I had a very good memory, so it was much easier to do chemistry.
So how did you get into chemistry, and what did you study? Where did you think it was going to take you?
I started being passionate about chemistry at school. It should be said that in my day, you didn't begin doing science at school till you were 14 or so. So I started studying chemistry just before my 14th birthday, and I then and now am very keen on buying books, and I bought a lot of second-hand chemistry books, often from the sort of late 19th century, and I read them all, so I had quite quickly an encyclopedic knowledge of chemistry, possibly rather out of date, but at least full of facts. I had quite an enlightened school, which in the days before health and safety was taken so seriously, allowed us a couple of hours a week to do whatever experiments we wanted with only modest supervision. I did all sorts of experiments which nowadays would horrify people.
Go on then, horrify me.
So, for example, I made borains by, I didn't trap them, but magnesium boride and acidified it. As a schoolboy, my fingers were permanently yellow from burns from nitric acid. And I'm ashamed to say that I used to mop up the bench with my handkerchief. And one day at a school service, church service, I pulled my handkerchief out of my pocket and the whole thing just dissolved into dust.
You'd probably made nitrocellulose, hadn't you?
Quite possibly.
But that obviously laid the ground for what you were to become. Did you at that stage think, well, I'm going to be an academic chemist, or was that a role that found you rather than you finding it?
I think my father had decided when I was quite young that I would be an academic scientist, and so I wasn't given much choice.
And how did you find yourself at Nottingham?
Well, I'm an unusual position that I have never in my life applied for a competitive job. As it says in the article, I did very badly in my finals at university, but my supervisor had faith in me and I was sponsored by my Cambridge College to do a PhD. And then in the second year of my PhD, my supervisor, Jim Turner, became professor in Newcastle. And so on finishing my PhD, I moved to Newcastle. And after 7 years, he moved to Nottingham and I moved with him. And on both those moves, he managed to negotiate a post for me.
And how did your interest in green chemistry come about? Because the first time I ever met you, it was at the British Science Association Festival. I think that was at the University of York. It would have been about 2007-ish. And you were standing there with a plastic bottle and explaining how actually many of the solvents and things we use to make the things in the world around us are extremely nasty, but we could replace them with carbon dioxide. And I was spellbound because I'd never thought of the concept of being able to use something relatively innocuous to replace things that definitely aren't. So how did you get into that?
Well, the reason I got in was that I became fascinated in supercritical fluids, highly compressed carbon dioxide and other similar gases in the late 1980s. And then in the early 1990s, about 1993, the SERC, the forerunner of EPSRC, had a so-called clean technology unit was launched, and they were offering money for research involving cleaner ways of making chemicals. And through our interest in carbon dioxide, we were well placed to try some of this out. Once I started, I was completely hooked.
And so now you've gone on, obviously, to develop this into quite a formidable research interest, haven't you?
Well, now it's really my entire research interest. And I've always been rather bad at making chemicals in the lab, personally. And so I have, for the last 20 years or so, been obsessed with trying to build machines to make chemicals. So you pump chemicals in, you pass them over a catalyst, and out comes a product. So our research group has developed a very strong interest in so-called continuous reactions, which are, of course, common on large-scale industry. They're less common in research labs, though in the last 5-10 years, they have become more fashionable in research labs.